thank you, Stephen Baxter, for coming and talking to us about H.G. Wells. You've just written and soon to publish the sequel to The War of the Worlds, The Massacre of Mankind, authorised by the H.G. Wells estate. And some time ago, you published The Time Ships, the sequel to The Time Machine. I wondered if we could talk a little bit about H.G. Wells in general. It's just been 70 years since his death. There are various anniversaries and centenaries of books always passing us by. And you are well known as a Wellsian expert. I believe Radio 4 recently described you as Wells's, the nearest thing to the modern incarnation of Wells, which yes. I think is a fine thing to say. What would you suggest to someone who's never read any Wells? Where would you start?
I would start with the science fiction, The Time Machine, The War of the Worlds. Maybe particularly The Time Machine, it's just so accessible. And his first novel, but you wouldn't know it, you know. Of all his science fiction, possibly that's the one that is going to last for centuries, like Gulliver's Travels, for instance, the status of myth. Wells has come and gone in critical acclaim, probably because he lived so long, wrote so much.
It's an amazing body of work when you look at it, I think. Yeah. You know, we all know sort of the big six science fiction novels, as it were, but there's a huge amount of stuff after that as well.
Much of which is very good.
Yes.
And was very well received in his day. But by the end of his life, he'd been on so many sides of so many arguments and such a volume of stuff. I think he rather went out of fashion after he died for 15 years or so. But then he was rediscovered by the literary establishment in about 1960. A scholar called Bernard Burgonzi produced an excellent little book on the scientific romances, which is still very readable now, pointing out how great they are. So if Wells had stopped writing in 1901 after the first Men in the Moon, say, that body of work would still stand as not just the founding works of modern science fiction, I think.
Yes, hugely influential.
But also as enduring literature. Out of that came the Wells Society, this academic body, who examine every aspect of Wells' work and have really curated his reputation, as well as his archives, manuscripts and so forth.
Does much of that survive?
Quite a bit. Not less of the early novels, but quite a bit. With The War of the Worlds, a magazine serialization was published as Wells was writing the book.
Oh, really?
So there are scraps of a very early edition. There's the magazine edition, which is kind of like a draft two, and then the novel is draft three. Wells continued to tinker with his novels as later in life, as Michael Moorcock does, as Chris Priest does, I think.
Yes, given the opportunity.
Yes. So, and I think a lot of scholars regard a 1924 edition of these novels as being the definitive one. But that was like a 60-year-old Wells looking back at his earlier
life. Yes, I mean, that's obviously some time after it. It can make them very different books with a different perspective and a different life experience.
To some extent. He didn't tinker that much, but there are a few key phrases that he changed. So that's true to an extent, yeah. A lot of scholars would say, go for the first edition. You know, that's the one that was actually entered the world, and that's the one that you should take seriously from a kind of theoretical point of view. I think one thing that gave those early novels their intensity was Wells's condition at the time. He came from a poor background, as everybody knows. He felt a responsibility. He had a young family. He was married. And he felt a responsibility to support his parents as well. He was only 30 when he wrote The Time Machine, The War of the Worlds, late 20s, early 30s. And he had a medical condition, a wrong diagnosis, as it turned out, TB. And he was given a short life expectancy.
How interesting.
He did have health problems. He moved out from London to Woking because of the green belt, the fresh air.
Back when Woking had clean air, yes.
Yes. He ended up in a house right next to the railway line, ironically enough. But he was aware of this impending doom. And I think that gave him a great intensity of internal pressure to get this work done, but also a very bleak view of the universe. He said at one point, every so often, the universe turned to him with a hideous grimace. And so you saw the dark future of mankind in the Time Machine. Dr. Moreau, this hideous cruelty of man against animals and so forth. Some very dark visions in there, all expressed through through fiction, and very deep fiction as well. Which is why that's going to endure. I think the unconscious Wells was very much dominant over the conscious Wells, if you see what I mean, at that point in his life. Later, 1901, 1902, he gets a clean bill of health. There's no reason to suppose he's not going to live for decades, as he did.
Well, as he did, yes.
And his perspective changed. He became much more concerned with the political project he'd become involved with, the Fabians and so on.
And you see the fiction move away from what we would now term science fiction, was at the time scientific romance, and into the more literary end of things in many ways.
Yeah. Well, even the scientific romances he continues to write, like A Modern Utopia, is it scientific? A couple of characters get shunted into a parallel world where Rome never fell, and you have a much more advanced civilization in the present. So it is a respectable SF novel in a way, but it's much more didactic. You have them wandering around saying how much better their world is than this. It's a moral lesson, you see. So instead of describing the hideous grimace that Wells saw, the young Wells saw, he went on to preaching, really, about how the world could be made better. And he was very effective. You know, I wouldn't diss his achievements in that regard at all. One of his most influential books, written in 1940, when he was 70-something, was about the rights of man, human rights. And that was taken as a founding text for the Declaration of the Rights of Man by the UN after the Second World War, after Wells' death.
Was it really?
Yep. So it was a very profound piece of work. And I like to think of the old Wells, after all the battles, you know, and he's seen disappointments come and go, and he's fallen out with all the Fabians, and he's seen the horror of the Second World War as well, or he's seen that unfold. All these things he predicted and coming to pass in a way. But all his wisdom goes into this fairly simple text, really. These are the rights of humans. And that gets taken up by the UN. So I think that's a pretty enduring achievement. If you've got to preach about something, make it that.
Yes. A pleasing end. Thank you, Steve.
Good.